You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 20 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mia Kruger, I want to touch that Fashini's update that came out yesterday. Centaur retail stocks still higher, that after Truvis had come after the close on Friday. Adrian Saville of Canon, Janet Yellen, incoming U.S. Treasury Secretary. Is she a known? I will find out and chat to Adrian about that. And then David Moore from Alexander Forbes, looking at the difference between public and private markets as investment options. Yesterday's poll, we asked you, is the risk on trade here to stay? 52% confidently said yes, it's real. 26% are concerned about it fading. And truthfully, 22% is probably the right bunch saying time will tell. That I suppose is the correct answer. We'll know in time. MoneyWeb Now, brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: Discover the other healthcare stock option. Everyone knows Discovery, of course, but this article talking about Afrocentric Investment Corporation, a smaller but seemingly much cheaper option to Discovery Health. Business Day, PSG and buyback of up to 20% of its 13.6 billion rands worth of shares. We're seeing a bunch of these coming through. If we've got time, we'll touch on it with Mia in terms of those buybacks. What long for life, NASPAS process, bunch out there. Morning markets, US green overnight, S&P up 0.8, and NASDAQ up 1.5%. Asia mixed, Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo down 0.5%. Commodities green, gold $1,848 an ounce, Rand 14.96 to the dollar. And we're looking for an opening, a green opening on our top 40, but only just a little under 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mia Kruger. She's a director at Kruger International. Mia, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. We had the Truvis update on Friday, just after the close. Market loved that on Monday. Yesterday, we got the Fashini Group update, and the market loved that even, well, I don't say even more, but sort of carried it on. I mean, not a bad update from Fashini. I mean, if we strip out Jet, they fell 4.8% year on year. I suppose that's not to be unexpected. I suppose the clear point here is that markets have just been perhaps overly pessimistic on our retail sector.
It does look like that, Simon, when you look at the numbers. Good morning. So, yes, I mean, we all saw that rally that started end of last week in the retail sector, which was quite surprising, not only for me, but when I read all my people that I follow on Twitter, you know, everyone was pretty surprised by the reaction. And, you know, the numbers weren't positive. They were even negative. So they said that they actually sold less and we expected them to sell less. No one really knew how much less they'd sell. But the interesting part is when we started to dissect these numbers, you know, it does look like people were expecting much worse. So that doesn't actually give us any answers because it doesn't tell us what people were expecting. But when I look at the numbers, you know, the focus point was definitely on what these companies did in terms of sales around Christmas and around Black Friday, which have been the two big talking points. And just in Fashini's numbers that came out now yesterday, you know, they said that they'd actually sold over 30% less on Black Friday than they did the year before. Now, that's a significant decrease. We all expected it, but it was much worse than I'd actually thought they would have sold on Black Friday. Then around Christmas, it seemed like the sales were flat. If you strip out the Jet acquisition were actually very accretive for them. They grew their sales by 14.5% if we include that, to the end of December. And it was interesting for me also to know that these companies had sold, they had sold more of the part that they sold in the last quarter in cash than they'd actually sold previously on account. Mm-hmm. So it seems like people are not buying on account as much as they did, which is a very interesting effect for me. Now, when we look at the whole consumer sector, it seems like people have changed. We all know that people have changed their spending habits. But with the fact that we can't buy alcohol, that we have to stay at home, people are doing things a little differently. So I've read a couple of interesting remarks where it seems like people are buying other things that they used to buy alcohol with. So in this case, it could be a case that they've spent more money on clothing and definitely on meat as well when we look on the food side. So besides the fact that people have increased their online purchases a lot more, and all these companies, even with Foschini's and with Truworths that we saw last week, they've all noted that their online sales have really skyrocketed compared to what it was, especially in the UK, which was the one focal point here. It seems like people have bought more clothes, which is quite interesting to me, because when you're at home, you really don't need more clothes. So, yes, we'll see how this trend plays out. The companies were still beaten down on a price level. You know, we saw them on a year-to-date, and or rather on a year basis. Year-to-date is very short, but on a year basis, they're still down from where they traded in January last year. So, for me, it's not a stealing buy. I mean, I wouldn't file into the clothing retailers, especially in South Africa. But, yes, there definitely were appetites in the market for them.
There was, and as you said, I mean, these weren't positive numbers in the sense that the numbers were going down. But I take your point. There's money in the person's pocket. I suppose it needs to go somewhere, and some of it's going to fashion. I'm with you. I haven't been buying fashion because I'm at home and no one is getting to see it. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, really appreciate your time this morning. My poll for today is, are you buying the local retailer rally? Mia just there said she doesn't think it's a steaming buy at all. Your view, most definitely not convinced, or perhaps you were the clever people and you were already in which case you've done incredibly well. You'll find that on the MoneyWeb Twitter account.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place?
Offshore.
While earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP.
Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Adrian Saville. He is, of course, the Chief Executive at Canon Asset Management. Adrian, morning. Really appreciate your time this morning. Of course, Joe Biden being sworn in as president in about 12 hours' time. Yesterday, we started with the confirmation speeches for his cabinet. Janet Yellen, the one I was most interested in. The odd tweet there is, of course, she was a Federal Reserve Chair, and now she's a Treasury Secretary. Similar to what we've got with Minister Mboweni, who was in charge of our Reserve Bank and then sort of, as he always says, stepped down to National Treasury. Is it a fair point to say that because she was at Federal Reserve, she's a bit of a known entity, or are these jobs just so widely apart that there's still a lot to find out about how she will be?
Morning, Simon. Good to be with you. I think it's fair to say she's somewhat of a known entity, but of course, you know, she's about to shift from a known environment in which she's been a very transparent, clear communicating, level-headed reserve banker into a holder of the public purse with political association or affiliation. So they're both financial roles. They're both, you know, working with money and numbers and figures and are key policy implementers, but reserve bankers by their nature or by design, by institutional design, are expected to have a high degree of political immunity and to be non-partisan. So it is, without question, a change in role, but the positive we've got in that circumstance is that we do know, how she operates.
Yeah, and what we're going to get, and I take your point, you know, central bank leaders are fiercely independent and sort of, in a sense, report to no one except the population, the country. Whereas, you know, as Treasury Secretary, I mean, in essence, she has a boss, and that boss is going to be President Biden, and she will be implementing his policy, such as, for example, the $1.9 trillion proposed stimulus package.
So, and I think in her working world, things are about to become a whole lot more political, which will be a different environment. That $1.9 trillion package that you reference is a key lever in U.S. policy. U.S. has underinvested in infrastructure for decades. And so this is an important policy lever. It has infrastructure spend by its very nature. Has important spillovers and linkages and multipliers, and you can think back to the very famous New Deal of the 1930s as the inspiration for infrastructure spend everywhere over the last 100 years. And that $2 trillion package is substantial. It's a significant spend, amounting to about 15% of GDP.
And she was talking a lot around that infrastructure yesterday in the bits I caught, and absolutely the U.S. needs it and hasn't seen anything, as you say, in almost, 90 years. The other thing which really struck me was her take on climate change. Again, huge difference from the Trump administration, but she was talking, you know, electric vehicles as one of the solutions to climate change. You get a sense that she's going to be a much more friendly, and of course her boss, President Biden, a Treasury Secretary, towards climate, which again will have a marked shift from what we've seen under Trump, and to a degree even under Obama, perhaps, because circumstances have changed.
Yeah, so there's a very important policy shifts, and we've flagged this, or we've identified this in our investment process as changing some of the needles of market direction. Climate change being one, global international relations and collaboration being another. And if you put infrastructure spend into that same pot, although over the course of the Trump administration, spending has hiked steadily and the deficit has grown from big to absolutely yawning, the 2020 deficit sits at just over $3 trillion, which is the biggest you've seen since World War II. And that adds to a significant debt-to-GDP ratio. U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio sits now in the order of 130%, which is just, that's off the charts. So if your economics one textbooks will tell you, you know, that's a default looking for a place to happen. Of course, it's the U.S. dollar-backed, which means it's an entirely different conversation. But Janet Yellen comes in part then, I think, to substantially change policy direction and policy narrative. In the same breath, she steps into an environment which is overspending, over-indebted, and underfunded.
Yeah, and 130%, as you say, Eco 101, that really is a case of, like, you're bankrupt. The U.S., different game, but 130%. We'll leave it there. Dr. Adrian Saville, Chief Executive, Cannon Asset Management. Adrian, appreciate the very early morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with David Moore. He is Head of Alternatives at Alexander Forbes Investments. David, morning. Appreciate the early morning. You're talking here public and private markets. My understanding would be your public market is your very traditional sort of investment, and a stock exchange and easy to trade. You know, you can go very, very short term. You can do the long term investing. We want to focus here on those sort of alternative markets, which would be sort of less liquid, perhaps longer term focus because of that liquidity, but offer a number of potential opportunities and alternatives to investors.
Yeah, 100%, Simon. I think, you know, private markets really speak to just the there's not that much mystery behind the name as much as sometimes it is associated with it, but nevertheless, it really just speaks to a broader opportunity set, a market of assets that's not really listed in any way or form, so you can't see the prices jump up and down daily, nor can you get out daily. Mm-hmm. but speaks to, you know, the broader economy. You know, it speaks to subcategories of asset classes, for example, infrastructure, which we all know we need in South Africa, be it energy and or any broad infrastructure asset. You know, that is pretty badly represented on any listed exchange locally. And so how do you access that? You access it via the private markets.
Yeah, that's exactly part of the attraction here is, you know, iExchange is actually very small in terms of number of significant listings. This gives us that opportunity. And it then gives us that diversity in our portfolio because we can go and get, as you point out, for example, perhaps infrastructure. We could go and get, you know, unlisted credit and private equity, even perhaps direct property, which is going to give different levels of correlation to a sort of traditional equity / listed property / listed debt market.
100%, and I think it's two drivers really there that drive that kind of lower correlation, lower volatility outcome. You know, the underlying opportunity set being obviously so much more vast. You know, case in point, if you think about the number of, say, small to medium-sized enterprises with turnovers in excess of 100 million rand in South Africa, that number is 10,000, you know, if not more, versus, you know, you've got a couple of hundred counters to play with on the JSE. So therefore, you obviously introduce different return streams by virtue of different types of businesses that are not represented. And so then you get that kind of nice outcome. But further to that, that lower correlation is also driven by the fact that these assets are, of course, are marked to market somewhat less frequently.
Yeah.
And don't say, I would say, endure the pain of speculation by investors and large pools of liquidity, as we all know, sloshing around the markets, chasing prices to levels which probably, you know, disconnect a lot of the time from what things are really worth, you know, so you don't have that same sort of experience or that ride.
I hear in that. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, one of the benefits that I like about it is that sort of lack of, you know, price changing per second, which can, you know, make me and investors do silly things. In other words, focus on the short term rather than that long term. That lack of liquidity, it means you've got to really say, look, I'm investing into this, and it's going to be a long-term commitment. This is not something I'll buy today and sell in a week. That actually, perhaps, I think, is quite attractive because it takes us back to good old-fashioned long-term investing and gets away from that hype and excitement of you know, second-by-second equity price changes.
100%, and I think the underlying asset categories within private markets, be it infrastructure or unlisted credit, endear themselves to sort of different time horizons. So, you know, infrastructure is really obviously geared to building primary assets that, you know, from scratch. So you're building a wind farm in the middle of nowhere. And so do it. You need to be patient because it takes time to build those sorts of assets and ultimately then see first cash once these things are operating and generating energy. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense to sort of, you know, buy and sell, you know, those sort of assets in construction phase or prior to them actually being operating. Same goes for the other subcategories, you know, in various degrees.
And one of the benefits, and you know, we have a social conscience, but it's often difficult to see it when we're investing on a JSE. The companies we invest in will have, you know, social plans and the like. This sort of investment really can lend itself to societal benefits. I mean, you talk around building a renewable energy farm, perhaps in the middle of nowhere. That's going to have real impact in terms of job creation, in terms of improvement to communities, without detracting from the from the quality of the investment.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Simon. I think these assets are dropped not in urban centres, but where the energy resource lies. So, you know, they get dropped where the sun shines or the wind blows, and that's typically somewhere quite remote. You know, in the middle of nowhere in one of our many provinces. And so, with that, they bring, you know, basic road infrastructure. So they upgrade the road network to access the wind farm there or the solar farm. They employ local labour. They also end up doing many really, you know, social, you know, good initiatives in the surrounding communities, be it building clinics, schools, funding early child development programs. You know, these sort of services and or kind of spillover benefits are huge for those sorts of communities. And so you as an investor, you get a long-dated inflation-linked return, but you don't compromise the social good that you actually provide over and above, you know, delivering a core asset and energy into the grid, which we all know we need.
Yeah, we can invest, we can be good about it at the same time. David Moore, Head of Alternatives, Alexander Forbes Investment. Appreciate your early morning, sir. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. The poll from my chat with Mia Kruger, are you buying this local retailer rally? Most definitely not convinced, already bought it, in which case you're sitting pretty. You'll find that on the MoneyWeb Twitter account at MoneyWeb. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. wherever great podcasts are aggregated. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.